Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Sandra Bueno, and I am the founder of Live and Learn Enterprises and the creator of the Power to Be You Network. And today is our second segment of the Power to Be You Empowerment Author Series. And I am extremely excited because our guest today, his name is Martin Tombeck, T-O-M-B-A-C-K. And his book is Spiriting Around, A Modern Guide to Finding Yourself. Now, before I present him, I would like to give you some background on who the author is. And just to let our listeners know, this is a series of empowering authors, visionaries, and leaders, people who are amidst us, who are bringing awareness, testimonies, and just a life philosophy about empowering who we are, what we are about, our present as well as our future. And today's guest has a life journey, 35 years of study to be able to support his book and his purpose and mission. And let me tell you that this book, his purpose of this book was geared towards teenagers. However, the content is for everyone. And what I would like to say is I am going to read from a release that he provided for me, which is just superb. He is truly an accomplished author, a person with a lot of integrity. His presentation is really unparalleled. I have not seen something so exquisite as what he has. And what I'd like to read, it comes from a release that he had, Spiriting Around, 10 Fresh Galvanizing Suggestions to Help Teens Find Themselves. Money, love, personal purpose. These are among the most confusing and challenging issues teenagers face every day. When all else fails, most people look inside themselves, and this is where they find out whether the spirit really moves within them. If you get your spiritual side working for you, then everything else gets easier. In his new book, Spiriting Around, A Modern Guide to Finding Yourself, Florida-based author Mark Tombeck has created a very special book that is designed particularly to help teenagers find the spirit within them. After studying a variety of religions and spiritual paths for 35 years, Mark came to the conclusion that spirit is our birthright, no matter how we interpret God. And every spiritual path has at its center a desire to know more about ourselves and our responsibilities in life. This enlightening spiritual primer, Spiriting Around, A Modern Guide to Finding Yourself, is a simple and easy-to-follow roadmap which captures and explains in no uncertain terms what teenagers need to do to find the spirit within them. Now, if you are not a teenager, worry not, because this is exactly for you and for me. So with that said, I want to welcome Mark on the show today. Mark, how are you?
Very good, Sandra. Hello to you. Hello to all your listeners. And thank you very much for that introduction. That was wonderful. Thank you.
Well, thank you. You deserve it. Your book is just a wealth. It is just a wealth of knowledge, insight, distinctions. Every page reads as a theme on its own. So it's just, for me, I want to just commend you on the fact that there is so much insight into this book that I don't want to talk more than I need to. I would rather have you just come on board and really share a lot of what you have on this book. I know you've submitted questions to me, and some of the questions are just superb, and I can actually just ask those questions and we would cover a lot of this book. But I'd also like for you to tell the listeners what prompted you to write this book and why is this book so important to you.
Well, thank you. I wrote the book basically because I had a miserable life when I was young, when I was a teenager. That's why I focused on teenagers, who I consider new adults, new being introduced to their responsibilities as an adult. Starting when I was about 14 years old, I went to a succession of psychologists and psychiatrists, and I finally wound up in a mental hospital for a couple of months back in 1970. And then about a year after I got out of the hospital, I made a total commitment to heal myself. And I examined my thoughts and constantly for the next 20 years. And when you do anything passionately for a very long time, you learn a lot about it. And spiriting around it is the result of that. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, you please go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say I had some important tools that I could work with. I'm very smart, and I'm not bragging, but that was the tool I was given to use to examine my own thoughts. I skipped a grade in school, and then I was put 2 years ahead in math and science in junior high, and then I won a national merit scholarship. But then I barely got out of high school. It was the 60s. And the drug culture, it fell on me like a lead laptop. A lot of people in those times, they got through it okay, but I didn't handle it well at all. And I lost 8 years of my life from 16 to 24 when I should have been building the foundation of my future. So that's part of the difficulty. The interesting thing about a mental hospital is that it's not a jail. It's not a punishment. It was like the start of the healing to all the problems that I had as a young person and growing up and problems with family relationships. I think a lot of people can sympathize with that.
And it's so interesting that, you know, in looking at your book here, and you said 35 years that you've studied religions, you've studied different philosophies, and, you know, you've really had a take on your own conscious awareness of your development, your growth. You know, for listening to you right now and having read a lot of your material, you say, you know, what is your feeling towards the experience that you had in your life? You know, there's a moment that you say, we live life so that we can help others. How do you, as a person, how do you see your experience?
Well, as you examine your thoughts and your spirituality, and that's where my sense of my spirituality was enhanced by looking at my own thoughts, and you look at a lot of books on philosophy, which is you're always trying to find out how should I live my life, what decisions should I make, what's my responsibility to my fellow human beings, and in either family situations or work situations or between lovers. You're always looking for a sense of responsibility, and love started to reveal itself to me at that time, and love being the essence of spirituality. So the responsibility you have in your own mind and your sense of caring about yourself is carried over to negotiations with other people, caring about other people, the mutual respect you have for people, and the philosophies and the religious points of view. See, I like all religions. I like anybody who's trying to establish a relationship with God and also ask themselves about their personal responsibilities to life. So religion's important, and I think every religion and every sect of every religion, they offer windows on love. They offer windows on how we should behave with each other. So as that, I think they're all valid, and they're all useful, and they're wonderful because so many people are different. Some people want a very austere way of looking at things. They want a set of rules and regulations they can follow that they feel will satisfy their responsibilities to life. And other people like something more freewheeling, like a Hare Krishna or other type of religions, or more conservative, more reformed type religions, more open religions, which ask people to understand God, understand their religion, but have more thoughts and more feelings about it. So, and in between the doctrinal, the dogmatic, and the freewheeling, you know, there's everything that appeals to all different types of peoples. And see, I think all religions are trying to do the same thing. They try to define what love is and what a human being's personal responsibilities to life are. And I think if you ask, does love lead you to right behavior? I think most people would agree yes. If sincere love is going to lead you to right behavior, and the answer to the question is, will the correct behavior or will a certain behavior lead you to love? I think you could say yes. I think it is valid in the sense that if that's your sincere thought, any religion, any behavior can lead you to love if the sincere belief you have in your own heart is to find love and the belief that one religion, one particular set of rules will do it for you. Then in the intention to find love, I think it can work.
You know, and it's so interesting to listen to you because, you know, we're looking outside of society and we're looking at all people. And of course, my take is always going back to the children, because the children are a product of who we are as adults. You know, these children are coming and they are being bombarded by so much that's out there in society, you know, just a consistent and continuous pressing upon their emotions, upon their feelings, their thoughts, you know, the materialism that's everywhere around us that suppresses us, you know, suppresses us and much more them, because they're very gullible at that age. Where do you see is the gap? What do you see is the issue right now that we as a society are facing when it comes to spirituality / God?
Well, young people have always they enter life and they have to learn how to provide for themselves, find resources, financial resources, and then they have to learn how to get along with everybody else, and then they have to learn to see the opportunities life presents and what they find appeals to them, what satisfies them, and what dignifies them, and to do that. So they have to learn the tools. They have to create the relationships that are going to provide that for them in a very practical way. The thing is, life really hasn't changed in 5,000 years. Technology changes. That's about the only thing that changes. You know, on the streets of Rome, they used to complain about the high cost of living, and today they complain about the high cost of living. And maybe a young person wanted a nice chariot back in those days, but now they want a nice car. So the thing about life is, young people and teenagers, they're the cutting edge of every society's social growth. This is where they start to have a sense of their place in the world, and they also don't have a lot of fixed ideas. They see what's available, and they try to see everything that's possible, which is fresh to them, which is that they have fresh ideas of how to put things together. But they still need the human relationships, the social relationships, and the traditions of mutual respect that the society builds from their experience, from their exercising these traditions of how people can get along, so anyone can do what they like, but not interfere with someone else. So this still has to be learned. So young people need guidance, and they need to be exposed to the experience of, well, if you go down this road, this positive thing might happen, but you might have this cost. And other people have run into problems with everyone talks about the drug experiences. And you try to tell kids, listen, you know, it's fun now, you have a few laughs, but there's real problems in the future. And it can these problems you can take with you into later life. You might need a license to get something, and you were arrested for possession of a pill or something, and it'll show up, and you might not get a license to open a restaurant or something. So that's something that teens or young people don't see, that there's a responsibility to the future, which as we grow older we come to understand. So it's two ways. It's the adult explaining to young people in a way that they'll accept the advice, and it's young people being open to the advice that people just because it's new to them, it's not new to everybody else. Everyone's been doing these things for a long time, and there's experience, there's books you can go to, there's places to learn it.
Now, let me ask you one thing, because I have, even myself, I've had coming on Block Talk and being all about personal development and having had my own spiritual journey be so aligned with God, God as my personal savior, God as my purpose, but also being very aware that, you know, I cannot judge another. I can only try to do good. I can only try to love. I can only try to maintain that level of human caring and dignity that most of us want to aspire to being and fall, you know, far from meeting. But How do you explain spirituality and God? Is one the same? Does one support the other? Do you find one by pursuing the other?
Well, that's a very good question, because that's the key to the difficulty that human beings have with relating to God and their spirituality. It's very hard to describe spirituality in human terms. Because in life, we want quantities, we want actions, we want to know, do this and it'll build this, and we can compare it to that. But your spirituality or love only asks for your sincerity. So an interesting thing, let me tell you a little story, if I may. I was watching TV one day, and I saw, it was coming from Washington, D.C., and they had all these national spiritual religious leaders, and there were congressmen and senators standing around, and one of the religious leaders says, we have people praying 24 hours a day for this. And I had a thought to myself, and I said, well, is 24 hours a day, is that better than if they were just praying 23 hours a day? And then I brought it back 22 hours. What if they were praying 10 hours a day? What if they were praying a minute a day? And then what if they just had a thought? What if they had one sincere thought about this from their heart to God? Would that be sufficient? And I thought, sort of the parable of the mustard seed. They said, faith as small as a mustard seed is enough to move mountains. And I started to understand that it's the sincerity in these prayers that's essential. If you can be sincere 24 hours a day, God bless you, that's great. But more importantly is to have that sincerity in your heart, to have faith in your prayer, so to speak. Not just to have faith in all the events, have faith in God, more so have faith in the sincere thought, the sincere consciousness, the feeling that you have from your heart to God's mind. And in that sincerity, in that moment, is all the abundance of the universe. So, well, I don't want to say there's anything wrong with praying. Sometimes a person's sincere thought is going back to, if I pray, that's my sincere intention. If I put more time in, that's my sincere intention. And that's fine. I don't want to say anyone shouldn't do this or should do that. But I'd like to point out that it's the sincerity. It's the sincerity that reaches God's heart. Even though some people like to have, again, going back to those practical actions, those quantities, those quantities which life makes sense to life, but in love, in relationship to God, it's the sincerity that's most important.
And you know what? It's so ironic to see that people will oftentimes jump. You know, when you hear a specific word, it's we're so conditioned to reacting, and we're so ready to judge. You know, based on our perception rather than our feeling, because again, the perception is the feeling, is the, you know, that thinking part, and that always interferes with the heart part, because the heart part is where you really feel that innate sense and that spirit dwelling within you, you know, doing and thriving, whereas the mind is always limiting through fear, through doubt, through questioning, through, you know, through all these different things that kind of trick us. What do you say about like the word manifestation and destiny, as well as, you know, like now instead of saying God, now we're using the word the universe. You know, it's almost like that esoteric term of the universe will give it to us.
Conditioning is a kind of protection. It's forming habits, and we need habits, because you don't really want to think through every action you take, and it's fine. And you can take this from the simplest action of opening a door when you're turning to talk to someone else, which sometimes isn't always the smartest thing if someone opens the door. But we're doing simple actions, and you can take this to a higher level, and you can condition your mind to think in certain ways. And also, you'll find that your mind has been conditioned in ways. Very often we form habits as youngsters to survive in our environments, whether it's in school or with friends or with a family. And as we grow older, those habits, they're like a burden, because you don't need those protections. As you come into your adulthood, as you grow up as a teenager, you can act on the world. You really don't need those protections. And some of them, maybe just to physically protect yourself, you show a timid side, or you try to be the joker in the group to belong. And as you get older, you start to establish this dignity we were talking about, the sense of self purpose, and you try to see the things in life that you enjoy, and you also see the things in life that you don't like. Manifesting things and creating things is a combination of things. A lot is spoken about goals throughout history in modern self-help books. Goals, goals, goals. And the funny thing is, it's important that it's spoken about that much. Goals, talking about goals, establishing goals is really that important. It's one of the prime ways you direct yourself in life. You give yourself direction. Goals take the chaos out of life. Life's chaotic. There's so much to, especially in modern society, it's not like we're just, running a plow or sewing or whatever we do and then come into a small house and now the TV's on and the internet's on and everything and you read the newspapers and the cell phone's ringing. We're constantly assaulted, so to speak, with this information. We're trying to process information. So, goals take the chaos out of life, and then what you find is when you have a goal, that your plans, they're going to naturally flow to the goals. You don't have to work that hard trying to list everything. Your plans, they'll come up naturally, and a lot of the details, they're just going to form themselves to accommodate your plans. It's almost like hitting a baseball or hitting a golf ball. They say keep your eye on the ball, and when you keep your eye on the ball, that your whole consciousness adapts itself to move towards the ball, to know where the ball is, to know how much pressure to put on the ball, to know the height of the club. Just it's an amazing thing. Your consciousness, your mind adapts your physical presence to hit the ball. And it's almost also like if you had a huge box of black balls and there's one red ball, and everything's moving around, bouncing around, that red ball keeps popping up. Even if it's 10 feet from where it was, it catches your attention. And as it catches your attention, you know what's in between you and the ball. You have a rough idea of the distance. And as it moves, you adjust the distance. You adjust to move around obstacles. So most important thing is having goals. It's said a million times. It should be said a million times. It's very important to have goals, and your plans will naturally flow to the goals. And if you look at yourself and you say, I don't know what I want, the truth really is this. There's part of you that does know what you want. There's part of every human being that knows what they want. The difficulty is accepting it. The difficulty is admitting it. And very often, you know, we're concerned. Well, if I tell people that's what I want, they'll say it's wrong. They'll say it's not right to do. And your dignity is going to suffer because you have to maintain the dignity of your goals. Even if it's just in the sanctuary of your own mind, even if it's your own thoughts and you don't want to talk to people about it, if you think it'll embarrass you with friends or family or somebody, at least have it, keep it, honor it in your own thoughts until you create a place where you can express it. And the funny thing is about once you start expressing your goals, you meet other people with the same goals and the same experience, and they like the same things, and then you start moving. You start creating the life you want by moving with people who have similar goals, similar purpose. They'll tell you about their experiences. You'll learn from them. You'll tell them about your experiences. They'll learn from you. You'll join clubs. You'll meet people. You'll read books. They'll tell you about books. You tell them about other books. And you grow and you move away from that frightened place, that reserved place, and you start participating in life. You start acting and engaging life and giving yourself your goals, giving yourself your satisfaction and your happiness. And one little exercise, what I like to do, what I tell people, if you're not sure what you want, go to a bookstore. Go where there's all these hundreds and hundreds of magazines. Take a slow walk through them. Maybe you like surfing. Maybe you like the book on hip-hop music will appeal to you. Maybe dressmaking, maybe fashion. Certain things are going to be boring, and certain things are going to pop out. And I'm just asking people, consider it. Admit it to yourself. Maybe there's something in what gives you a spark of a feeling that you like. Pick it up. You don't have to talk to everybody about it until you're ready, but at least kind of appreciate yourself. You know, if you have a like feeling, if you have a feeling that shows satisfaction and interest, honor it. Consider it.
It's amazing because you have such a way to be able to bring about all of life, you know, all of life's lessons, and
nice to
be able to. You make it so you make it so easy, and that's what the whole purpose of your book, where you say you don't have to. In one of your inclusions here, you say so this book could be an opportunity that saves you the misery of discovering that life doesn't have to be so hard. You know, and I really feel that this book, you know, and you kind of need to read it, you know, page by page and just embrace the message and think through it, because I know for you, it's basically your whole life put into this practical guide of
yes.
how to live life and how to make it easier for yourself by embracing your spiritual nature and by understanding that we have it all within us from the beginning.
That's one of the key taglines, is life's too hard. I believe that. I believe we have a relationship with God. God loves us. God's available for us. God doesn't want us to suffer. But in the course of creation, life has become too hard. And I made up a little story. I say that life was always a struggle for me. And like a vengeful child, I decided I was going to get back at God for it. So I decided I was going to find a way to get back at God. And you think this is impossible, but I found a way. I decided I was going to take the pain out of life. Sincerely, this is what I thought. I'm going to take the pain out of life, and then I'll get back at God. So I confront God with this, and God says to me, well, kid, if you think you can do it, then show me what you got. And then before I say anything, God says, I'm going to do you one better. I'm going to help you. And then God says to me, deal. And I agree to it. So this is how it happened. God became my patron and my nemesis. And isn't that the way life always is? You're always in this challenge with life. The life is really a spiritual event. It's this challenge. And at the same time, we always have God's love and support getting through the challenge.
How can we jump to that place where our life becomes easier? How can we jump to the place where no matter where you are in your chaos or in your struggle or in your stress, financial, anything, you know, or relationships or work or your body, what would be the key to really place you, for the listeners who are out there and saying, okay, I'm feeling it, I know it, I'm in this mess, give me your secret potion. What is your message?
An excellent question, a beautiful question. You need patience. Now, life takes work. It takes hard work, and it's interesting. Sometimes you'll have an epiphany. You'll think, "Gee, I always thought that's what I wanted, but now I realize in my heart and my soul, this is what I really want." And it would be great to say, well, now that you've realized it, your life will change. But it'd be nice to tell you it'll take a week or a month or 6 months to integrate this new thought and concept and eliminate the habits or negative thoughts and negative habits that you've created to revolve around that thought and also give it some credibility. But now you realize it's not credible and you have a credible thought. So you have a process of two things. You have to remove the false thought, and you got to put the honest, sincere thought in. And it might take you years. It might take you a decade. It might take you your whole life. I still get sparks of things I worked on 30 years ago, but now I don't worry about it. It comes and it goes, and it usually comes when I'm tired, when I'm sick, when I'm the weakest I can. And even in that one thought, by casting it away, it's another strength I've demonstrated that even when I'm sick and I have a cold or I'm exhausted, I can still think clearly. So it takes work. It takes honesty. It takes patience, and it takes kindness. When you're honest with yourself, a lot of junk is going to come up, and you'll see things that make you uncomfortable about yourself. So you have to be kind with yourself. So as you're honest with yourself, and stuff comes up that displeases you about yourself. You don't want to be contemptuous of yourself. You don't want to feel bad about yourself. You need to be kind to yourself and accept it, that it's part of the work process. Like anything else, just think that it's part of the process, the work it takes to heal your mind. And then just be patient. It takes time. It can take a very long time. But it's not like now I understand that I'm going to have to wait 10 years to adapt it. As you immediately, you're going to find results. Immediately, you're going to find satisfaction and happiness in the accomplishments you have. You may be disappointed. You have the thought. You may act on the thought. Then all of a sudden, you start catching your thought in time to stop an action. and then eventually you stop having the thought, or you reduce the time of the thought, or you reduce the amount of situations you have the thought in, and it gets less and less and less. Once you have this thought, you've broken a barrier. And remember, you know, this is God. You're working with God. You're working through this resistance that God appreciates, that God understands you in your fight and your effort and your work. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say that what I find so very interesting with you is that, you know, you have so much the message in you because you've lived your life, and like you told me, you said there were situations where the experiences that shaped your life, some of them were dangerous type experiences. There were situations where you had encounters, metaphysical encounters, and you also had 35 years of going through the spiritual knowledge. Can you, and yet you come to a place where it's like, okay, here's the message, but can you elaborate a little on those situations? Can you give us some examples, or just tell us also what, you know, in one of your questions it says, what qualifies you to write a book like this?
Well,
you know, what is your experience?
I was a drug addict for many years, from about 16 to 24. And I guess the greatest qualifier is, and I had a natural sense of this, and I had metaphysical experience. Even when I was 8 years old, I guess my first introduction to metaphysics and spirituality was when I was about 8 years old. I was walking to school, and I kind of stopped, and I looked at everything, and I said, what is this stuff? I was looking at houses and trees and just your normal everyday world, and I felt separate from it. And I would have these kind of, I call them moments of conscious reality. I'd have them maybe once or twice a year as I grew up. They were very uncommon, and it's like things would come out of my mouth that it was smarter than I felt I was. And the interesting thing was it only lasted for 4 or 5 seconds, maybe 10 seconds, and once it disappeared, I couldn't get it back. But I had this light feeling in my body. I had this sensitivity in my arms and the back of my neck. And, it was enough to push me in a direction that says, explore these things. The interesting thing also is a lot of people, when they're 8 to 10, they really have a sense of their future, whether they want to be in politics or be a fireman or be a nurse or whatever it is. They really do have a sense of their future. And me having a sense of a spiritual future, it's not so foreign. We see the pet psychic and the psychic detective, and we read our horoscopes every day. Everybody has a sense of this. The spirituality, the psychic sense of the world, it's natural, it's normal. Like people are tall and short, people have more or less an inclination to this. So this is just what my inclination was. And I read a lot of books that most people read, the Von Däniken books, and I watched One Step Beyond, and I even read books about Saint Germain, and this is when I was in junior high school. And then I had a very strange experience when I was about 20, 21 years old, and I was at a party. I was on LSD. If anyone wants to blame this this event on the LSD, they can, but it wasn't, because I've had many LSD trips, and this was different. I communicated telepathically with a person at the party. Now, remember, I'm just 20, 21 years old, a confused kid, and I'm communicating telepathically with someone. I don't talk to people. I don't want anyone to know my confused thoughts under any circumstances. And here, I had the thought, oh, they're going to know what I'm thinking and what I don't know and all these things. But it was a very gentle experience. I would have a thought, and the person would respond to me in my thoughts. And it was kind of terrifying, frankly. And I left the party early. I didn't even leave with the person I had come to the party with. And the very next day, I went to the bookstore. I needed some definition. I needed an explanation about this. And I started reading the Edgar Cayce books. Now, a lot of your listeners are familiar with Edgar Cayce, and he was from, I guess, in the mid-1940s. He was a trance channel, and the wonderful thing about Edgar Cayce was they were recorded. People would, I think he had stenographers or someone there recording the channeling sessions, the medium sessions. So there's a great history, a written, not history, but there's a record of these channelings. And a lot of people had success in paying attention to a lot of the medical advice he had given. And he would talk about Atlantis and other lives and reincarnation, and that this fascinated me. And I kept reading and reading and reading, and then I would go to other philosophies. So what I was doing was training myself. I had a little spark of when I was 8 years old, a sense of my purpose, and people could have any sense of their purpose. And then I had a dynamic experience, a shock with the telepathy, and then I started training myself. And the thing about when you train yourself, when you read books, you question yourself. So then you start educating yourself with the ideas that you have. Life is basically a question machine. See, life is a spiritual event we were talking about. It provides resistance to a soul to explore life. And what we do all day is we ask questions. Constantly, from when we get up to when we go to sleep, we ask questions. Every moment in our mind is another question. And this is God's process. This is how God explores the universe. It's through us asking questions. And I don't have to ask anyone to consider it. This is all you do all day. Should I go here first? Should I go there? Is my tie straight? Is it fine? And then the perfect question, once you finish something, what do I do next? And then you say, what do I do? And they go there. Should I do this? Should I do that? Should I move it more or less? So questions. Questions is the dynamic thought in everyone's mind as God explores experience, as God explores creation through us. That's why we have so much support, because we support God through our questions and God's purpose, and God loves us and cares for us. And really, as awful as things can get sometimes, and fully life's tragedy shouldn't be diminished, there's also an end. You know, we're born and we finish this life. It's not like these things, problems are endless. So it's a fascinating experience where we teach ourselves and we have love's God support as we do it.
And you know, I have to thank you, because your transparency and your honesty, it puts you in a different place. And I also would say, coming from a personal development sector, and to the listeners, it is about having the flexibility of our awareness to be able to listen to something and to not allow ourselves to become judgmental and to learn from a person that's been through an experience that is very difficult, very challenging, and to get out of that experience and to be able to come to a place of realizing that, okay, that was an experience, and how am I going to be served, and how am I going to serve others through what I've lived? And, I respect that highly, when I can listen to a person who has been there and done that and who can now step on the other side and put themselves there in the forefront of everyone else's viewpoint to say, listen, this is who I am, this is what I am about, and this is the message that I have, because I know what it feels like. I know what I went through. I know what it took. I know what I had to give in return. I know the sacrifice I paid. I know all of these different scenarios, and now I can help you not go down the same path, or I can help you make sense of that, or I can help you look for a way out. And that's what I see with your story here in the beginning of your book, where it just gives you a page of about the author. It really hit me when I read these words. You said, I wanted to write this book for a long time. I always felt I had something to say that would help others, but I had no idea of the high price the research would ask for. And this is the line that really hit me. Who would embark on such a journey if they had to consciously live the cost before paying the price? All I knew was it was the right thing to do. Then I did it.
Well, a funny thing about writing the book, I wanted to write it for a very long time. And it's kind of you read that so nicely. I got emotional. I always felt I had a book to write, also about teens. Because these are new adults. You really have the same problems as a teenager that you have into your 40s and 50s, and even into your retirement. I kind of was upset with myself. I was 40 years old. I hadn't done anything. I always had this thought. And then I'm staring at the window one day, and I had this thought, people are waiting for you, and they're suffering, waiting for the information that you have to give them. and it struck me, and it was, I felt it wasn't about myself anymore. It was about other people, and I had this responsibility to them, and that more than anything else inspired me. And with that thought, I actually walked over to my desk. I pulled out a yellow pad, and I started writing notes, and I wrote an outline about, I don't know, 20 pages, and then it gave me such a headache, I threw the whole thing away, and I wrote my five chapter headings, and I went to the first chapter, and I just started writing for there, and that's how the book started. And I made a huge mistake doing it longhand. I'll never do that again. But it was this concern, this responsibility I felt for others, and that they were suffering. And I knew that what I could give them and share with them would help them. And it's just what you said, to avoid avoidable problems and to be able to exploit your opportunities. And these are the things a lot of people don't have. And that's why I say it's for people of any age. It's a guidebook for growing up at any age, because you might find 90% of the things in the book you feel comfortable with, but I'm sure there's 10% that's going to be fresh and new, and a new angle on something you're doing. And the whole purpose is to help people. And I don't tell people how to think. I felt my purpose was to put out some options for people, and to show them how to think, to show them how to question in their own mind, to show them how to trust their own thoughts, and to examine things and get advice, but always with a grain of salt. Because a lot of people you go to for advice, they really don't know more than you do. And they certainly don't know what your goals are and your values are. So sometimes they do. You always have to question it. And sometimes people they think they know it, but they really don't. Or some people have ill will towards anybody and will give bad information. There's some people, you know, either from financial gain or some other advantage they want to create for themselves. So yeah, it's good to ask questions. Again, I think life is a question machine. And when you can control your questions, connecting them to your goal, that taking the chaos out of life, and you connect your questions that you speak to people with your goal, and then question the answers. You want to question the sincerity of the people you're talking to, question the ability of the people you're talking to, and also then talk to other people with the answers. Try to get verification for your answers. And you can do this with any situation and any question you have. So I ask people to think. It's my belief that if a person thinks about a problem or a situation sincerely, and remember that sincerity that I feel touches God's mind, I really don't care what answer they come up with. I just would like them to have conscious values, to think consciously, and to be sincere. And then if they come up with, I can't complain about someone who's being sincere if they come up with a different perspective than I do. It when I trust their sincerity, I might question myself a little more about it. And the sincerity is it. There's an interesting thing. I once had this thought about prayers, that every time I said a prayer, I was in a dark room, and every time I said a prayer, a little hole went in the wall, and light came into the room. And I said another prayer, and a little hole came in the wall, and light came into the room. And I kept doing this, and then I had the thought, why don't I just take down the wall? If I remove the wall, I can have all this light in my life all the time. And the thought I had is, you can live your life as a prayer. You can have a little portion of your mind, a little piece of your sincerity in your daily life, reach out to God. Now, I just ask people to consider this. Some people have different opinions of who God is, what God is, if God even exists. I just ask people to consider this and consider making God a part of their life. I see God as being in everything and everywhere. So that also means that love is everything and everywhere. And that means you can relate to God, you can relate to love in everything you do, in your thoughts and your actions, and you can have this sense of things. And I don't want people to feel uncomfortable about it. It's not something where you make mistakes that you should have guilt and punish yourself into changing your mind. This is about self-love, and self-love and love and mutual respect means you care about people. And you have to care about yourself in a kind way. The work can be very tough, in that you're going to expose things about yourself you don't like. you're going to, you know, very often you there's a core thing you don't like, you cover it up with a thought or a rationalization, and you want to clear away the rationalization and get to the thought, core thought, and then you want to just care about yourself and love yourself and understand it's just part of life. And once you have a thought, you can remove the thought. The mind is beautiful. You can change your mind about things. The hard part is that they become habits. What?
No, I was just going to say that you have a great way to just really put these different exercises, thoughts, practical ways of being able to take a part of your life or of your situation and really use it as a guide. You actually provide, in your book, you provide ideas and you provide tools and questions and how to lead a person to their own awareness. You here have I have here on a list 10 keys that people should be learning, specifically, say, teens, but it's for everyone. One of them is taking control of your life. And, it, you know, every single sentence has such a purpose and such a definable vision to accomplish once you put yourself in that place of questioning, of just looking and really investigating what it is that you come up with. You know, like for example, when you speak of spirituality, you say, make spirituality make sense for you. Then asking yourself questions. I mean, I love this because personal development is all about the questions, the type of questions that you ask. That's what's going to determine what you do, your action steps. You know, if you're asking silly questions that are of no value, then you're going to get silly responses and you are not going to be motivated to change anything. So here, with your ask yourself questions, I'll just read it just to give the listeners a little vision into how this is laid out. You say, ask yourself another question, and then another question, and then question your answers. That's because the meaning of self-awareness is that you ask yourself questions. It is your purpose, so that means that it is God's plan. So treat your questions with reverence and respect. Always do your best at it. You don't have to be perfect, but you should want to do a good job of it. Be sincere, be hopeful, and keep asking questions. And that's a great, I mean, that's not even just advice. That's knowledge. That's distinctions. That's something that's a tool that a person can, from now on, to say, let me ask these questions. In your book, you say, ask questions. The people that answer, ask them more questions. You know, don't just accept what you hear. Question it. Look at it from all different angles. Come up with your own solution, you know, and keep it so that you are being fulfilled in the process.
And if you're sincere in listening to the answers, every person is qualified to make a good judgment on what they hear, on the answers. So it's very important to trust yourself. The theme of the book, a main theme of the book, is that loving God and having a relationship with God is really a practical way to deal with your everyday problems. And it's not religious, it's a spiritual outlook. And what I tell people, this is not seafoam on the beach. This is not the sunbeams coming through the silhouetted clouds or the sunset. This is a very practical look at life with a spiritual standpoint, a spiritual perspective, that spirit, it's your birthright. You can use it. It's like every other skill and talent and sensation and feeling and sense that you have. You have this ability. It's up to each person to explore it, to look at it, to think about it, and to see how they can utilize it. And spirituality is not so foreign. The access to spirituality is through love. As you feel love, as you sense love, you're touching your spirituality. There's a lot of ways to explore it. You just have to have a sense of it. You have to be open to it, and then use love. I'm not asking people just to say, love everyone and you trust it. Everyone wants something to be reliable. Everyone wants to, I'll have faith if I know it's going to work for me. I'll have hope if I know it works. The only way to know if these concepts work is if you use them. You have to try them out. And what faith is trust in love, and hope is the belief that love is going to get you what you want, and And charity is the belief that there's value in love. And loving God is trust in life. That's what we're always talking about, faith and trust in life. You have to see it. You have to have a sense that whatever you're going through, God's hand is there. And if things get too tough, you call out. God is there for you. We're not hanging off the edge of a cliff by our fingernails and it's the end of the world. Have a thought, go out to God. And sometimes when I get tired and I've been working hard on a problem and I can't get it to work no matter what, and I've gone into meditation or I'll say a little prayer, whatever. Sometimes if I see I really hit a brick wall, I just back off and say, boss, you handle it. I've sincerely given this everything I could. I've stayed up late. I've walked away from it. I've done everything I could do. I've done somersaults. I've sat there still. I've done everything. I can't work it out, and you handle it. And I'll sit down, and I as a joke, with the sense I get is God says back to me, okay, kid, sit down and relax. I've got it from here. It's just to have a sense of, it's always in sincerity. It's always.
And what happens after that?
It resolves. It resolves itself. God, I have a relationship with God. I have a sense of my responsibilities to God and God's responsibilities to me. You know, it's important to consider that you can have a relationship with God and God can have some responsibilities to you. You want to bring God into your life. Again, you know, people have different religious aspects of this or even a non-belief of God about this. But if they consider you an honest, sincere, bringing God into your life, making God a practical part of your life, again, through love, again, through the sensations of caring and mutual respect and embracing what you care about, and there's a certain time, you know, let God take some responsibilities, even if it's just a whisper in your ear with a thought or some idea that comes out of the ethers. It's important. It's important to consider. And it has to. These things have to prove. These things have to be reliable if you're going to trust them. So, but you have to test them. You can't just. But it's good to consider testing them and giving them a chance, so to speak. Give them a chance to prove themselves. If they prove themselves, even in a little way, if you give the smallest test, and I'm not saying, you know, God stand up on the bowling ball on one foot. That's never going to happen. If you ask for help, if you're in a tough bind, and you ask sincerely, you're going to find that faith is real, and God responds. Let me mention one. A lot of people try to define love, and there's a fascinating passage in the Bible. It's in 1 Corinthians 13, and it's love is long suffering, love is kind. A lot of people are familiar with it. And the fascinating thing is, I've never seen a definition of love anywhere else. In a way, it's priceless. And it's not that you have to take it verbatim, but it's a wonderful place to start your questions about love. And I've also seen different Bibles have different translations or different interpretations, and they nuance it. They give you a little shading, and then you can adapt it to your own thoughts and feelings. But it's a wonderful place to start your questions and your thoughts about love. 1 Corinthians 13, and I've never seen anything like it anywhere else. You know, it's just a great way to think about what does love mean. You know, so that's a great. A great opportunity for people to consider.
And we always say, you know what? What is love? Is it a feeling? Is it an
sure.
action? Is it Is it a verb? Is it an adjective? And when you're there, it's more difficult to really live out love, and do it without having a spiritual sense of who you are as a human being. That's to me is the most prevalent awareness that, you can't, self-love, just self-love alone cannot happen if you do not have a connection to our Creator, to our God. And you are of Jewish descent, and it's very interesting, to say that, because people get hooked up and they get hung up on the labels, they get hung up on the words, they get hung up on the descriptors of what God is or who God is.
There's 4,000 religions on this planet, and I love them all. Like I said, they're necessary. People relate to life differently. Some people want to dance. Some people think it's wrong to dance. Some people want to spend all day in prayer. Other people think it's in actions that they reach out to God. We have whirling dervishes and Shinto priests and Hasidic Jews we have the Roman Catholic Church, we have the Greek Orthodox Church, there's so much. And then there are sects within sects, and everyone trying to look for a little definition, a little way that appeals to them. And that's what I love. I love that there's so much that people can find. You just have to respect each other. They're all windows on love. It's always going to come down to love and how we respect each other. And like you said, it's the self-love. It's got to start with self-love, because we learn self-love in this environment of both conflict and cooperation. So that's where it's exercise places. That's where it's testing places. And so you always, it's negotiating these things, and then having thoughts about them and having conscious values about them, deciding this is right, that's wrong, at least for me. And also for anyone who's going to be a friend of mine or wants to have a relationship with me. You know, certain things you can respect, and very often the one thing you respect is that everyone has that opportunity. And you know, one of the great things of America, we have that opportunity to disagree, to explore our world and our existence in a way that doesn't intrude on anybody, and that nobody imposes on us as well. So as long as we can maintain that basic thing as human beings, then religions, contemplations, considerations. Just have values. The important thing is these values we have. We often have compromises to make, and the way what we're willing to sacrifice or not sacrifice, they frame our values. And then we have paradoxes where we find two things very important, and then we have to make a choice, and the values crisscross, and we're going to have to make a choice, and the choice you make today about the factors or considerations may change tomorrow when there's a slight difference in the factors or the weather or anything, but you still have to make choices. You know, when the building's on fire, it's easy to decide to run out of the building, but should you take the portrait of your wife or the portrait of your mother if you can only carry one thing? You know, these are difficult choices, and so what? So
it's going to get worse. But you know what I'd like to say? We actually only have 2 minutes left, but what I'd like to say is, well, this came to mind with what you just said about, you know, the conflict of values and beliefs, and you know, and just we're talking, like you said, spirituality. You cannot define it in human terms because our human terms are so limited, and our vocabulary is limited. You know, our emotional IQ is limited. But when you look, for example, I kind of seal it up with this. You know, that when you ask a certain person and they say, "What race are you?" and you know, they say, "Well, we're the human race." No, we're all human. We all have the same nervous system. We all have a heart. And, you know, most of us will cry at the same thing and rejoice for the same purpose. And recently I was in London, and I was there with my father-in-law, and we were speaking about Power to Be You, which is about bringing this awareness, bringing this social awareness to people so that they can be empowered to recognize that we are in a different era and that we must stand up to recognizing our own abilities. And, you know, and I said to him, if in this moment, here we were in Gatwick, and I said, in this moment, if there were a bomb scare or if there were a big bang again, we would all fear in the same way. You might have someone who would become the leader and say, follow me or stay here or do this or do that, but we would all be looking for someone to take the lead, and, you know, and we would all be in the same fear. No matter what color, what religion, you know, what age, we would all be in the same place. So I, you know, I'm just so thankful that you have this book, that you have so much to bring to people. I also want to use this last minute just to give them your website, which is www.spiritingaround. That is spiritingaround.com. And you are also the publisher. You are the writer, the publisher of this book through Mooringfield Books. They can go to Mooring, M-O-O-R-I-N-G, Field Books at msn.com. And can they call you, or is there a way that...
Well, the easiest way, Amazon's a great way to get the book, or go to your local bookstore, or Barnes & Noble, or Borders, and they can order the book for you. It's available to anyone, or come to the website. It's a great way. You can order right online there on the website at okay. SpiritingAround.com.
That is excellent. Well, I did not open this for calls because there was just so much information you had, but I believe that in the future, this is going to, your book and us meeting together, we're going to be able to perhaps take this further and just really allow people to come in and really go into this journey with you, spiriting around. And I thank you. I just really am thankful for you for coming here, and I look forward to having you once again and just working with you. So,
sure.
Power to be you, as you have.
Love Talk Radio.